So where are you now? I mean, you gave us a clue last week, but let's just confirm.
Where are you in the world? What was the clue I gave you last week? Did I give you a clue?
Didn't you say at the end of the pod that you will be in Paris next week?
Oh yeah, there's the clue. I'm in Paris. I just gave you the answer, didn't I? It's quite surreal, actually. I'm back in the same hotel that I stayed in for the 3 weeks for Roland Garros. I'm working at Roland Garros, but there is no tennis. So it's very weird that I'm back here so soon after the tennis.
So strange to be back at Roland Garros. Totally different vibe, I guess.
Very different. So I'm back here for Padel. Premier Padel. It's a completely different vibe. It's so quiet, and in a way that's weird. In a way, it's quite nice. There are four match courts that have been transformed, including Philippe Chatrier. So I put some pictures on my social media, but they've transformed Philippe Chatrier into a padel court. So the black surround and then the blue of the court with the cage around it is on Philippe Chatrier, which
looks very cool.
It doesn't. I mean, I think they've done really well with the colours, and it's so strange to think that what, 4 or 5 weeks ago, Rafa Nadal was on the clay lifting up title number 14. And then we're here for padel. And some of the outside courts are match courts. And then you've got the practice courts. There's food trucks. There's musicians. It's very chilled out. It's very laid back. Now, padel is something that is growing outside of Spain and South America. So it's and the next tournament's actually in Spain. But In terms of the numbers, I think they will build as the week goes on. But it's something that it's the fastest growing sport in the world, but it's still attracting people. Do you know what I mean? It's still bringing people into the sport. So the numbers have been pretty good. Today, Wednesday, we get the top 8 seeds in, and these guys are on another level. I mean, one of the guys playing today is called the Rafa Nadal of padel, and some of the stuff.
Oh.
I mean, some of the stuff these guys.
How many French Opens has he won?
None.
But
he's got.
I feel like that title's given out quite freely. Alcaraz is the next Nadal. Everybody wants to just hand Nadal's titles over.
But he's the equivalent in padel. So in terms of the character, in terms of skill level, in terms of the number of titles he's won. But we've got to remember that in terms of like majors, it's a new thing for padel to have the system. And all the players are saying it is so nice to be at Roland Garros. And they just talk about everything's done for them, you know, the cars, the food, because again, padel is not on the level of tennis. It's gradually getting there.
Sure.
But it's a lot of fun. We've got the commentary box next to ours are the Spanish world feed, and they're really lovely. So we've been kind of picking their brains on everything to do with padel. Yeah, it's a really nice vibe. There's, I think, 5 matches a day on Chatrier. I'm getting my head around more and more padel. And we're hoping later in the week to try it. So I've never tried it. And
oh wow.
I don't think it's going to go well, but I'm hoping that we're going to get onto a padel court at the end of the week when things quiet down and when there's no one watching, and to give it a go. So yeah, it's good. It was a bit of a rush from Wimbledon finishing Sunday night to being on the first plane and airports. I don't know, when were you last at an airport? Airports are horrendous.
Yeah, we're just not doing it. We're not going away this year. It's just not going to happen. We just decided there's no point.
Or just drive. Just don't go to an airport. I know this is not what our podcast is about, but the airport, honestly, I got there 2.5 hours before my flight and I nearly missed it. And that is
absolutely crazy.
It's check-in, it's security, it's queues. And you're kind of like, whoa, this is, at that time of the morning, I thought I'd done. So yes, so that was a bit crazy, but wonderful to be here. The weather. I don't know what temperatures are like in the UK. We're talking here today, I think 36 degrees, I think.
Oh, it's hot. Yeah, well, I mean, it's always going to be just that little bit cooler in London, but it was 30 yesterday.
Wow. I'm not going to complain about the heat because we want the heat, but it's really, really hot. So in terms of athlete, whatever sport you're doing, performing these kind of conditions is, we're in an air conditioned commentary box. So I've been wearing my jumper.
Oh, yeah.
You have to take a jumper. People keep saying to me, what are you doing with a jumper? You have to have a jumper if you're working in a commentary box. But yeah, so it's good. It's good. It's different. I feel that Wimbledon is already a long, 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 long time ago. But it's really nice to be here. It's slightly strange being here and there not being any tennis on. But no, it's really good fun. But again, I mean, Wimbledon. Have you had time to sort of sit down and take in Wimbledon, or is it already forgotten?
Yeah, let's dig deep in the memory bank all the way to 3 days ago. what happened. But yeah, I don't know. It's difficult. I mean, the slams are so long, aren't they, with 2 weeks. But then by the end of it, you think, oh my God, how did we pack all of that into that short space of time? It's done. Our champions, Rybakina and Djokovic, once again, wrapped up when it comes to the singles event.
What's your overriding memory from Wimbledon? There were those that said it was a classic. Those that said it wasn't. Those that said it was okay. What's your kind of main takeaway from the championships of this year?
Oh, overwhelming. When it comes to the singles events, do you know what? When I look at Djokovic winning,
yeah,
I actually think he didn't even play that well.
No.
He was down. How many matches was he down in? Losing the first set for fun, losing two sets to Sinner and coming back. It was like he was just such a slow starter, which is just ridiculous. But that is so impressive. The fact that, you know, he still only needs to be able to play at that level. Okay, we didn't get Nadal through to face him in the final. Maybe it would have been different then. But yeah, I think... there were so many storylines, weren't there? Like, as there always is in a Grand Slam, and it was so much fun. I mean, I loved that. I just thought the Rybakina celebration was just hilarious, like just ridiculous.
I was gonna say, what celebration was that?
Just a fist pump, just a fist pump, and a little bit of a smile. But that was great. She seems like such a nice girl. And it felt like a little bit of a long time coming with a couple of years for her. The on story just, you know, was out of control. It was so hard, I think, to separate from the on story, wasn't it? Because it felt like her destiny to win it. It just felt like it was going to happen. She'd had the picture of the Venus Rosewater dish on her phone. She said at the beginning of the year she was going to win Wimbledon. You know, she was playing so well into the final. But Rybakina very much the party pooper.
She almost wanted it too much, you felt, from Djokovic. I think that weight of wanting it, because in the, you know, the first set was so, but the second set, the tightness in the Djokovic game, the tightness in that forehand in the second set from Djokovic, whether it was where she was and how close she was to a life-changing dream. But you saw her visibly tighten up, and you cannot do that against Rybakina with the game style that she has. And, you know, Ons has made and will continue to make such a difference. We use the term trailblazer. She is, and she will continue to be so. But I don't know. Do you think maybe it was just wanting it too much that stopped her from getting over the line, not to take anything away from her opponent?
Yeah, I think possibly. I don't think she could have won that match, to be honest. I don't look at that and think that Djokovic needed to increase her level to win the match. I just think that Rybakina was too good. And after we watched the semi-finals, Rybakina semi-final, it was a case of if Rybakina plays like that, there's nothing Djokovic can do about it. That level is too good. That hitting is too clean. And she did find a lot of that level in sets two and three, really, after she got over her tightness. And look, if you're going to organise and manage your tightness and nerves, which is a complete luxury and very, very few people can do this, you want them to come at the beginning and then ease up through the match. You don't want to be relaxed at the beginning and then get tight as the match goes on, as the finish line gets nearer. You absolutely want to have the momentum of loosening up and feeling better. And that was sort of how Rybakina did it. So maybe it played into her hands a little bit. Oh, do you know another memory, though, that does stand out? It's not really the tennis. Going up and down that ladder to our commentary box.
Oh.
It's just a ladder straight up.
No, it's vertical.
There was no lean.
Vertical.
No lean. You just had to climb straight up. Straight up to get to our
We normally have like a backpack, you know, a rucksack or a bag or something. Some people try and take their lunch up there. Some people are carrying coffees. It's impossible. And then when you get to the top, there's kind of a gate to the right, which you can go in, I think, like a photographer or a cameraman. You could fit maybe two in there. But there is...
Crouch down.
There is no room. Literally, you go up this ladder and then you have to punch in a... excuse me. Then you have to punch in a code. And you have to turn the door handle the right way after just punching. It's a lot going on once you've just got over the trauma of climbing up the ladder. So what I did, there was another entrance around the other, but you could only use that one at change of when there was no play, with change of ends or beginning or end of a match.
Oh, could you go change of ends? So I was only allowed in when there was no matches on. So no, if it's in between matches.
Because change of ends, people go into their seats, right?
Oh, right, okay, fine.
A massive error. Yes, no.
I was up and down the ladder like crazy.
I think I did the ladder twice, and then I just tried to time it. So I remember there was one day when we were, I think we'd finished for the day, the show, and there was, I think there was a doubles or a mix coming on Centre Court. So you know when you come off air and whoever you're with, you sit and have a little natter, don't you? Oh, how's your day? Wasn't that great? Ugh. And I saw the warm-up clock counting down to like 20 seconds. I was like, I've got to get out. And I think I was in mid-conversation and I thought, I didn't mind going up the ladder, but I wasn't coming down the ladder. I think there's a lot more room for error coming down the ladder. Would you agree?
And going down wasn't as off. I didn't go down as often because it was normally the end of the match, so I would be able to nip out the other way. But yeah, and I should mention that we were working for the BBC, and the BBC gets the best commentary boxes at Wimbledon because they're the main rights holder. Amazing. That's how it works. Yeah. As in, we're making it sound like we're sort of in the rafters. No, no, we are court level. You've got BBC TV basically to the right of the players' entrance to the court and the royal box, and then we were on the left of it. So it's a fabulous, fabulous box.
Oh, it's just.
Got a very interesting entrance.
You've just got to suffer to get in there. I didn't go down the ladder. I didn't want my sort of bottom being sort of lowered down onto people as they're looking up. So I'd always go the other way. But some people didn't know there was another way to that. But you know, we had the likes of Tracy Austin and Kim Clijsters. And every time anyone came to the box, they were like, this is incredible. They were like, this view is incredible. But if you were
it's the best
tall,
view.
you had to bend down. And if you didn't want to go down the ladder, you had to time it. It was literally, I was grabbing my stuff thinking, there's 10 seconds, time has been called. And I was legging it out so I could go out the front.
Yeah, well, didn't your co-presenter, wasn't he crawling in all the time? I think he was crawling, wasn't
Tony he? Tony was like crawling on his hands and knees alongside the back of the commentary box. But I think what we sometimes forget is there's like a webcam and then back in the bunker, back at base in the broadcast centre, there's a big split screen and on one of them is a view of Centre Court commentary box. So sometimes you can just see him crawling on his hands and knees at the back of the commentary box. You're like, what are you doing? Just walk, slightly bent over, just walk. So you've got to remember, in this day and age, there are cameras everywhere. But that was, you know, that is one of the memories, that ladder. And look, it was great. We were really lucky to have and we also had the option of a high up position as well. So you could get the kind of different looks on it. Where do you end up on Nick Kyrgios? We're going to see him again. Is this going to change him? Is it the same? Is it what you expected?
Oh, wow. Grand Slam finalist. Wimbledon finalist Nick Kyrgios.
Yeah.
Never thought I'd see the day, I must say.
No.
I think he will play out the year. Why not? He's playing well. He's played a full season this year. Like the reason he's able to make the final and play as well as he did, he's played a full season. He's been playing week in, week out. He's been winning matches. And it doesn't, you can't just turn up and expect it to happen, as we saw with Serena. So, you know, Kyrgios is always capable of a big win here and there. But to go on a deep run, like, you just got to be playing well. Hopefully we see him through the US Open series, US Open. I think he'll probably wrap it up after that. I can't see him sort of grinding out tournaments post US Open. I think then it's probably like a 50-50 chance as to whether we see him again. Like, he's going to go back to Oz. He's going to be at home. He's going to be there for a long time. He'll probably play the Australian Open, I imagine, and do the Australian Open. Is he going to want to then just go back into it? It was interesting. In his on-court interview, he was asked, does this make you hungry for more? And he said, no. It just doesn't. And I believe him. I don't think he's trying to be funny. I believe that he is standing there thinking, oh, God. You know, he's probably exhausted. He's been on the road forever because that's how it works for Aussies. So, yeah, I think it's 50-50 as to whether we'll see him sort of post Australian Open 2023. Look, the guy's just, he's earned £1 million, right, for reaching the final. So, yeah.
I mean, he just doesn't like tennis, does he? I think.
No, or travelling. Or being a tennis player.
I mean.
Or anything that you need to do.
I think and I know he said a few years back now that he will do it. He'll make the money, put it into his foundation, whatever. But I don't know. There's part of me that just says stop. I know he's entertaining and I know he'll bring people into the sport. And maybe, and are you of the theory that we need people like him in the sport? Is he good for the sport?
I don't think we need him in the sport. I think he's good for the sport. I think that it's good when he's playing properly. I mean, through the years 2020 and 2021, when everyone would talk to me about Nick Kyrgios, I was like, he's not a player. He doesn't play. He's not on the tour. I don't really know what to say, to be honest. He played a handful of matches and that was it. So, yeah, it's great to see him focused and really sort of trying as hard as he can. Because we thought that wasn't really going to happen because we've been waiting for it for such a long time. But yeah, I don't think the sport needs him. I don't think the sport needs anyone. I think, you know, no one's bigger than the sport. He definitely brings a different element. I think that people who watched him had a great time, really enjoyed it and felt like it was a real opportunity to see him. But yeah, I mean, it's up to him, isn't it? I don't know. Do you think the sport needs him?
No. Maybe that's because, I don't know, maybe personally I just get a bit annoyed with him. I think it does need characters, but I think for me what gets with Nick Kyrgios is he's so negative about everything, you know. And I know he deals with a lot of issues, but the way, I don't like tennis and I don't want to respect traditions and I don't want to do this and I don't want to do that, and do you know what I mean? I just get to the point, I'm like, well, stop it then. Do you know what I mean? Like, I do think tennis needs characters. I think it needs personalities. I think Naomi Osaka is really good for women's tennis. I think she brings something. I don't know how long she will be in tennis. But I think we need characters. We need personalities because it brings other people into the sport. And Nick Kyrgios will attract other people. But I think for Kyrgios, I just don't feel he really respects the sport. And I don't think he really cares about the sport. And he's always like, I don't want to do it. You know, sticking that red baseball cap on centre court the final. Just don't do it. Do you know what I mean? Just for once, it's the Wimbledon final. Whether you care about traditions or not, just don't put it on. Do you know what I mean? It's like he always has to do a little something to be a rebel, to be different. And I think I'm just a little bit over that. Maybe I'm, you know what? I think it might be because I'm old. And maybe that the young generation, like, that's really cool. And he's kind of doing this and he's doing that. But I'm just a little bit like, he genuinely looks so miserable when he's out there. He's one of the most talented people I've ever seen hold a tennis racket. And that is phenomenal. But I think I'm just a bit over it. Do you know what I mean? I'm just.
Well, you said, you know, stop then if you're going to be so negative. He might. He's earned his money now. That was what he was, his motivation. And he's just earned £1 million. You're not going to get a bigger pay check than that unless you win the US Open. Or win a Grand Slam, and the amount of effort that takes, does he have it in him to do it twice? I don't know. I don't, like you say, I don't think he enjoyed the journey.
No, I don't think he, yeah. But it's, and yeah, so I'm a bit like, if you really don't like it that much, then it'll get to a point when he's not really doing anything for the sport. He'll bring people in to watch matches, they'll talk about him, but I'm a bit sort of, as I say, I think I'm just being a bit old and grumpy. But you know, one thing I did think the other day when I was watching the final, Djokovic Kyrgios, and Djokovic is divisive, and we've had our conversations, haven't we, about Djokovic, about the things he does and the sort of daft things he can do off the court. But I looked at him and I thought, I don't want him ever to retire, which is quite a strong statement, isn't it? I just love watching him, and I love what he brings on a tennis court.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, and I think that maybe because we haven't seen Federer for so long, look, Federer in full Federer mode is fabulous, but we're not going to see that again due to age, due to injuries, due to timeouts. So I've kind of reconciled with that. Nadal, I've always been a little bit, I have so much admiration for what he's done, but everything, it's, you know, there's so, oh, the time with Nadal, everything that goes around Nadal and everything. If he were to say at the end of this year, I'm going to stop, of course, we'd miss him, but I'd be okay. I don't want Djokovic to retire. I'm not saying he is, or that he's hinted that he will. And I'm sure he's going to go to get the record before anything else happens. But I was just thinking that the other day, I was looking at the commentary box window, and I just thought, I don't want him to retire.
Yeah.
I think he has everything. He has, obviously, the game. He's got the edge as well. I like that edge to him. As I say, I'm not saying I agree with everything he gets up to or has done off the court, but purely speaking about tennis, I think he's got everything. I like the edge that he has. I know he wants to be loved by everyone, but I love the edge he brings. I love his tennis. I love his competitive drive and spirit. I love his hunger. And I will be very sad when that day comes when he decides he's not going to play anymore.
I think it's a quite far off to be honest, because I think he won that tournament at like a 7-8 out of 10. So I can't see it happening. Body seems fit and healthy. He's not struggling like Nadal is. And look, I've always said, well, I say always, probably for the last 5 years, when everyone talks about how Djokovic isn't as well liked as the others, it's, you know, I've always been so convinced that he will get the adoration. He will get the respect from everybody once Federer and Nadal are done. Once he's got all the titles, or maybe once Djokovic is done, maybe it will just be people looking back on his career. People will miss him hugely. And I think people will feel like they took for granted a little bit of what he did, the people that weren't massive supporters of him. You know, he can be difficult to like sometimes, but in terms of the respect for what he achieves and just his level on the court, it is out of this world. He's pushed the sport onto new levels, and no one apart from Nadal can keep up in any way, shape or form. As you see, we were talking about it in the last pod, with Sinner being two sets up, plenty of others being up. You know, even Cam Norrie in the semis is set up, and then somebody playing so well, the crowd behind him, such a big hype, he really faded away. He just could not live with that level at all. And okay, Djokovic was playing decent by the end, but he wasn't playing unbelievably well, I personally don't think. But still, you know, Cam Norrie having this amazing tournament and the level that he could produce, just nowhere close to him, really, at the end of the match. So, what he's done for the sport is huge. It's absolutely huge. He, you know, if you look at like Venus and Serena, for example, but Serena particularly, I mean, we bundle them in together, but Serena particularly, what she did for the WTA, how she pushed it on just on the court was one thing. She also pushed it on off the court by reaching a whole new audience, becoming this ridiculous superstar. You know, she's an A-list celebrity. Okay, Djokovic hasn't managed to do that, but what he's done on the court is comparable, I think, to what Serena has done in taking it to new levels, demanding more of the opponents, pushing it on, and just really raising the bar. And I just think he continues to do it. It's amazing to see the gulf between him and, you know, whether it was Tsitsipas in the Roland Garros final last year, Sinner, Norrie this year, the players that are supposed to be nipping at his heels, they're nowhere close to him. They can't touch him with a long stick. They are so far away. They might nick a win here and there in best of three. They might be able to take him out on a very bad day in Grand Slams through the best of five. But it happens so rarely. It's unbelievable. So I do agree with you, but I think that a lot of people are going to be like you, that they start getting to this point, especially now Federer is really not featuring, and Nadal, well, he's obviously still featuring heavily, but when Nadal finishes, then I think people will really start to understand what we've got in Djokovic, because what we've got is superhuman.
I heard little rumblings that his ban from Australia could be overturned, because there was the talk, wasn't there, that the very realistic point that after winning Wimbledon, he might not play another Grand Slam until May 2023. That's because, as things stand, he can't go into the US because he's not vaccinated, and he has the ban from Australia. And then, you know what? Nadal will probably save himself from win number 15 at Roland Garros. Oh, that, you know, if that happens, if he wins another Roland Garros, it's ridiculous. Just want to put it out there now. That'd be ridiculous. But that is a long way away. So, you know, there is that very real possibility for Novak Djokovic. So it will give someone else an opportunity in the USA to see if they can scale those heights. We got Medvedev coming back, who was pictured watching the Grand Prix during the Wimbledon final, so he's going to be back and on court. It's really happy to see Dominic Thiem winning again on court, because he's back.
Oh, we missed him.
I can't imagine what that journey must have been like for him. Not only was he injured, but he was having all those doubts anyway that we've heard players talk about when they win a Grand Slam or they achieve a lifelong goal. And it happened to Djokovic in 2016. You know, what do I do now? Where do I go? What's the next goal? What's the next thing that I aim for? You know, it's like restarting. So such a shame for Dominic Thiem. So we can only hope that he gets himself back up and running, and on we go again.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The one thing we haven't talked about on the pod, but you did talk about it on Five Live, is your career in the movies.
Oh, yeah. Career in the movie. Well, TV. Slightly different. Not quite Hollywood just yet.
But it's kind of... Is it a movie? Series? Program? Documentary?
No, it's TV. It's a TV series.
Can I call that...
It's not a
film.
Movie.
Is it a film? A film?
No, it's a TV series.
I want to make it sound like really...
You would be terrible at charades.
Oh, yeah, no, I would be. I'd be absolutely... Okay, so...
Is it film? No. It's a film. No, it's not. Is it a film? No, it's not a film.
Okay, is it? Is it a TV series?
Yes.
Yay, I've got it. So tell us as much as you're allowed to say about what you're doing for those that don't know and wonder what the earth I'm talking about.
Yes, so there is a big new drama being filmed.
It's not a film. Sorry.
Oh, God. There's a big new drama TV series, a new drama TV series being filmed in London. And it is set in the world of professional tennis. So it's not about tennis, but it's a drama. It's about, you know, relationships and people and, you know, just like a normal drama. All these things go on, but it's in the world of tennis. And I am working closely with the production team as the tennis advisor / consultant / coordinator. All the tennis-y bits I'm you're trying to help with as best I can. So yeah, they've started filming just the last few days, and I'll be spending quite a few days this summer on set and helping out. So yeah, it's very cool. It is a huge challenge, but one that I've really enjoyed. It's nice to put sort of my skills to a completely different challenge and try and come up with solutions that way.
What's been the biggest challenge? And again, this is all the stuff you're allowed to say, because I'm sure there's some stuff you can't really talk about. I mean, I don't know how things work, but what's been the biggest challenge so far?
So, well, it's been working with the actors, I suppose, and not in a bad way. They've been lovely. They've been lovely. But, you know, I've got multiple actors all in different parts of the UK and Europe, and needing to set up their training schedules. So I need to find coaches and fitness trainers and work out their schedules, tailor things to what they need, you know, look at what they're doing in terms of the exact tennis that is required from them in the script, trying to train them up. I've also then had to find tennis playing body doubles, like a stunt double, but a tennis double for the actors. So that can help with filming, but they've got to look very similar to the actors so that you can sort of switch them in and out. And yeah, so that's been, I think, sort of a real challenge. I've really enjoyed working on the scripts a little bit and trying to adjust things and saying, oh, it would happen more like this, and this is how it would look. I've been working with the art department on scene setting, and these are all the bits and pieces that would be in a training gym and all this sort of stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's really... all these little details that you would never think of, there's plenty to get stuck into.
So say I was your actor, right? So I'm doing the acting bit. You'd have to find a body double for me. Is that right?
Yes. So I'd have to find somebody who can play tennis to the right standard, which is a high standard, that is the same height as you, same frame as you, same skin tone, and as similar hair as possible, ideally the same.
Oh, guys. Wow. Okay. And
it's very difficult when the actors don't have a twin that plays tennis.
So the body double, would that be from the world of tennis? Like they'd be,
yes,
whether it's club or whatever standard, they would, I'm not saying professional tennis, but maybe they would be. So the body double has to play tennis to a good level.
Yes.
Very good level. I, as your actor, what would my level of tennis have to be?
Oh, well... That's very...
Would I have to have a level of tennis?
No, I was not involved in the casting at all. So, it's just a mixed bag. I've got some that play sort of decent club level, some that complete beginners.
Right. So it's not a prerequisite of the actors to be able to play tennis to any level. Is that right?
No, no, it's not been, actually. And yeah, as I say, so we have a wide range. And I was slightly nervous thinking that, oh, the beginners would be much more difficult to work with. But
yeah,
they're actors. They're very good at copying movements. And they are very good at that. So if you just say, you know, some of them are professional dancers or whatever they might be, you know, move it like this. I mean, if you take the ball out of the equation, it's, you just think about how you walk, how you move on the court, how you run to a ball. They're very, very good at picking that up. Actually, what's been really interesting is that the ones who are very good club level, who can play points and, you know, move the ball around, it's been slightly trickier, I think, because they have... They've been playing tennis, but at a slightly lower level. So when I mean, as opposed to the professional level that will be required in the TV series. So, for example, the movement that the beginner can copy me do. So if I'm doing it for them, they can copy it. The club level player has just never really had to make that movement because the tennis isn't that fast. You don't have to be down low and, you know, playing open stance all the time. It's much more sort of you run to the ball, you set, and then you swing, and then you run to the ball. If you know what I mean, it's different. You're not playing on the move. You're not having to react. You're not in the same position. So it's actually quite interesting because you've got some that obviously have all these habits ingrained, and then you've got some which are the blank canvases. And it's been really interesting to see how they've developed over the last few months.
I didn't think of it like that. I guess, yeah, if someone has done something for however many years, that's what they do. And then it's harder to almost retrain them. Whereas if you've got an actor coming in and they've never done it, then they're more open and willing because they don't really know what it should look like. So you can tell them exactly what it should look like.
Yeah. So, and that sort of surprised me. I mean, obviously, if you put the ball in play and they're playing, of course the club player is going to be much, much, much better. You can't learn how to play tennis to a high level in a few months. But if you took the ball out and you're just shadow swinging from the back of the court, it's particularly with the movement, I've found it's easier to sell it, I think, from the beginners. Although all of them have done it unbelievably well. It's been really, really impressive because tennis is much harder than anybody realises to look good at playing tennis. And I think that anybody who doesn't know that, I mean, it's one thing teaching somebody to look good kicking a football, but a tennis swing is a ridiculous amount of coordination. I mean, if you think about the serve, for example, it is such a complicated shot. And really, a junior will go through years. It will take them, the top junior, so say how I was, would take me years to learn a serve. At 6 years old, you might start with the racket behind your head, and then you just do the ball toss and throw forwards. And then you might have a little bit of an abbreviated serve and then throw through. And I'm talking for months at a time. You might do this for 6 months before you move on to the next stage. And then you add in starting with your hands together, and then you hit the serve for another 6 months. And then you will start bringing your back foot up if that's the way you're going to go. Do you know what I mean? As in, to get to the point where you can hit a full serve, it genuinely takes some of the most talented kids in the country ages to get to it. Is a very, very difficult serve, a very, very difficult shot requiring a huge amount of coordination. So yeah, that is that's obviously the hardest bit by a mile, but it always is in coaching.
Wow, you're going to have a busy summer. Have you suggested to the director or producer a scene where you and I are sat on a coffee table in the background recording our podcast with our tennis mugs on display?
Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it? That would be nice. I'll have to try and get a cameo.
If you can't get cameo, just get one of our mugs. Just put a mug, because I'm sure while they're filming, just get a mug. And if you haven't got one, I think I've still got a spare one that we forgot to send to someone. I can't remember who. I actually gave one of our mugs to a friend of ours, Charlotte, in Eastbourne, media manager. Now, this mug is, what, how many years late? 3 years? 2 years? 4 years?
Yeah.
4 years. 4 years late. And I went down and she said, finally. Nice, and I'm really sorry, but I was very impressed that I still had the mug. It was still in one piece. So, but I think I've got another one gathering dust on the top of my fridge. So if you want it and you think you can just, there's got to be a scene, isn't there? Look, all tennis players drink water. You could just have this little mug next door. What are you thinking? Good plan?
I can try.
Well, I can try. Why not? It's like a, I dare you.
Okay.
I dare you. And I haven't, by the way, I haven't forgotten your flag test. But the problem is at the moment we're dealing, when we're doing this podcast, you can see me. I can't, all I'm looking at is a blank screen. I don't know if you haven't played your bills or your phone's broken or what's going on here, but I can't see you. So we can't do our little flag competition, which I still have for you at some point when we do one of our pods.
Yeah, my camera's broken.
Ah, you see. We did kind of spend a lot of time in the end together at Wimbledon. We should let people know that we got some good time. We actually had dinner one night.
We did, yeah.
Didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the team dinner. It was you and I.
Yeah, no one else made it.
No one else made it, but you and I had a really nice dinner. So we actually got, I don't think people realise that we might speak to each other a lot via phone and do the podcast, but it's so rare we actually get to sit next to each other and have a drink or have dinner. So that was...
It was a fun 2 weeks.
It was... Wimbledon's always quite crazy and it's so different. I don't know how you feel. I find it so different from all the other Grand Slams because a lot of the time at another Grand Slam, there's less of you. Or I don't... Well, still lots of people, but do you see what I mean? Wimbledon is such a big thing and lots of people come from different sports and different areas. And sometimes if you go to... Like when you're in Paris, you were part of like a team of three or four. And you obviously know other people, but that's your kind of little team. And that's how we kind of operate. So, and Wimbledon is this like behemoth, which is amazing. Mm. And I was so happy to bump into people I hadn't seen for ages. But it's pretty full on. It's pretty amazing. We're very lucky to do it. And then the next week I'm in Roland Garros, which is amazing. And I feel really bad because there's lots of things going on at the boys' school this week, like little assemblies and... They did a French assembly the other day, so I'm having to get there to send their dad and a friend of ours to go and like take videos and send me what's going on because we're coming towards the end of term. Soon it's the summer holidays. Oh, wow. And that's when things are going to get very busy. But we're going to continue to pod through the summer. You are going to be filming, I was about to say your TV series. And when's your next tennis tournament?
Oh, I think I'm doing Washington. DC, I've got Washington and then Cincy for ATP. So, US Open series. Are you just going to be totally freaked out now because you're... Because, you know, we always plan our years around tennis tournaments. So, you know, you've got Roland Garros, you've got Wimbledon, and now you've got Roland Garros again. I don't know if I could cope. I might just fall over if that was the case. I don't know. It doesn't function. My year is pre-Wimbledon, post-Wimbledon.
No, it's weird. So when I'm walking back from work, I'm looking in the restaurants... ready to see some familiar faces and they're not there. I'm expecting to see lots of people with the accreditation around their neck and they're not there. And it's a really lovely, relaxed atmosphere and it's so enjoyable working on the paddle, but it's very weird being back and in the same hotel. You've got to remember I'm in the same hotel. So it feels I'm doing the same run in the park that you walk past from your hotel. So I'm doing the same run in the park. I basically got my routine back, but at the same time, things are very different. So it's very weird. And for me, the next stop after this is the Commonwealth Games before back to tennis and the US Open. So it's all a bit, yeah. And I think old age and tiredness, I'm having to, it has messed up my kind of, I'm back at Roland Garros, but the weather's nice.
I feel like it'd be May again, May, June. It's strange.
Yeah.
Strange.
No, don't say that. It's going to be... So it is weird, but it's lovely. And it's lovely to be here. I am looking forward to a little bit of time next week, just a bit of downtime with the boys, catching up on the washing I haven't done for ages, all the admin, the bits and pieces that get left behind. So I need to have a little bit of time to do that because a lot of stuff, you know, like Grand Slam, you don't get a chance to do anything, like nothing.
No, that's it. Grand Slam mode.
I'm looking forward to just getting back into a bit of routine, whether it's emptying the dishwasher, doing the washing, putting the bins out, just a little bit of that before work kicks in again. But we will continue to pod because the world of tennis never sleeps. And there's always something.
Never sleeps.
Always something that's going on. And you're very busy. But we are going to find the time. Probably not together for... I can't think of the next time we'll actually be together. No,
don't think about
it. Yeah, no, I'm not gonna think about it. But I'm gonna go and paddle now because I've got this. I have to say one thing about paddle. It's, I think, 70 odd. There's 56 pairs in the draw. 72 of the athletes from Spain, just to give you a feeling of how weighted towards Spain is. And then I'd say the next biggest chunk is from Argentina. And I just want to talk about the names for a second. There's some names going on here, and I'm talking 4 or 5 names in one. Do you see what I mean? So I think, but wonderfully, I've got a friend here, Camille Pin, who used to play tennis, who speaks Spanish, French and English. And every morning I send her a voice note with my matches, and I ask her if she can voice note me the pronunciations, because sometimes I look at them going, I'm going to completely butcher that, and that's not right. So yeah, every morning she gets a little message from me, and then she writes back saying, okay, this name, this should be it. Honestly, it's been a godsend, absolute lifesaver. So Paddle, the names are quite complex. I think especially as you're getting to know them, but there are some very complicated names going on here. So yes, I'm off.
Well, good luck with your Spanish accent.
Yeah, I've got my, I can see my voice notes come in from Camille. So I'm going to go and sit and do my my homework before it gets started. Good luck with the body doubles and the tennis and the everything. And we'll speak again soon.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.